podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
This is a Piccolo Podcast production.
All right, welcome back to Cricket Unfiltered. I am Menners. I'm joined by Paul Dennett. We've just recorded our first Super Over show. Paul, I'm happy with the way it went.
Yeah, it was fun. It's fun talking about the IPL in some detail. It's cool.
Yes. I was surprised. So we're going to catch up on a bit of cricket news domestically, quite a bit happening in the last week. But, there's actually been a bit of cricket going on. Usually when the IPL's on, it's a bit of just that, nothing else. But Bangladesh and Ireland played that test match. So I guess Josh Little, the Ireland bowler, who's the first ever Irish player in the IPL, must have missed that test match for an opportunity in the IPL. And there's also the Fairbreak International Women's Tournament that has about 28 players from 28 different countries playing in the T20 tournament. So quite a bit going on. Have you been watching much?
I've been watching a lot of the IPL, and I actually, that Bangladesh-Ireland game passed me by, which annoys me because it's the sort of game I would be interested in watching. I don't know why they're scheduling it at the same time as the IPL. I think that's got to stop. And I thought it had stopped.
It was free on YouTube. I was watching.
No, I'm not saying it wasn't good, but I'm just saying Josh Little shouldn't have to make that choice. He should be free to be doing both. So they've got to just accept it. They've got to say, right, no, when the IPL is on, there's nothing else on. And it's ridiculous to be scheduling matches that are on at the same time as it, I think.
Yeah, well, Bangladesh won that test match. Ireland put up a good fight. They're a good team. Lorcan Murphy, I think was his name, scored the second test century for Ireland. And it was actually quite interesting. I started off the summer commentating a lot of on those Irish players at Coogee Oval, not far from where I live, and there they were all wearing the baggy greens, playing in a test match. But on the domestic front, Paul, I mean, we'll start, I guess, with the men's news. But the first thing was they negotiated new contracts. So the memorandum of understanding, which basically just decides how the money is divided up between the players and Cricket Australia, they went through that. Now, in 2017, listeners to this podcast will remember, it got very heated and it got very ugly, and there was a time where the players were off contract. Well, you have to say, Paul, that aside from just the numbers, Todd Greenberg, head of the ACA, and Nick Hockley, Cricket Australia, did a good job keeping it out of the papers and getting it done.
Absolutely, yeah. And the fact that it's slipped in under the radar as compared to, I mean, it was at the point last time where there was even talk of the Ashes, the 2017-18 Ashes being under jeopardy. That's how bad things have got to. So it's wonderful. Sometimes you want things to be a bit boring, and this is a good one to be a little bit on the boring side.
Yeah, so I guess the big differences and some of the really big, the great things about this new deal, the increase to women's pay. So women's players will now share in $133 million. That's increased from $80 million. And the minimum and average CA women's contracts will increase by 25%. This is something you and I have been talking about. The WBBL's got to be careful not to fall behind. Well, they've doubled the salary cap to almost $750,000 every year. So I think that's a really good sign for the WBBL.
Definitely. And yeah, they should fight the WPL the whole way, and it's in both leagues' best interest for that. So it's very heartening to see that they are not taking a backward step.
And an average women's player now, if they play in the WNCL and the WBBL, can earn around $150,000 a year. But if you're just playing in the WNCL, you can earn a really good wage of almost $100,000 a year. So it's the highest paid women's team sport in Australia now. So it's a phenomenal achievement by Cricket Australia.
Yeah, and obviously the players at the upper end who are playing just more than that when you factor in what they could get outside of Australia as well in the WPL and in the 100, there will certainly be players who are going to start to be earning well in excess of $1 million.
Absolutely.
fantastic. And we keep on saying it, but from where it was 10 years ago, the change is amazing and thoroughly welcome. And it shows what you get when you invest in, when you invest in women's sport.
Yeah, you're right. The top players, Australian women's players, can earn in seven figures. And then in the men's side of the BBL, the salary cap has increased from $2 million to $3 million. I think it was just under $2 million. It's now gone to $3 million. So that's quite a significant increase to try and keep pace with global wages. And also the average wage is almost doubled for a BBL player now. So they're really conscious that a lot of the leagues around the world are posing a significant threat. So that's really good. That $2 to $3 million will certainly help bridge the gap.
Yeah. And I mean, not only does the Big Bash need to take into account all those other leagues that we've talked about at length, the Bangladesh League, the New South African League, there's the Dubai T10 and whatever else, you know, long gone is the, it wasn't that long ago when it was comfortably the number two league in the world, but it's also still got to fight that, the fact that for a long time, the heart of the summer for most Australian fans wasn't the test matches. It was the 50 over stuff and the World Series Cup and all of those matches that have now been totally marginalized, and the Big Bash needs to step up and take their place, because otherwise you're just going to lose a percentage of fans to the game forever. So it is good that they are increasing the revenues. I'd like to see them increase it more, but you know, that's not bad.
And also in a move, I think, to make sure players don't go overseas, they're increasing the number of men's contracted players to between 20 and 24 every year because of the three formats. From it was 17 to 20, but it's now increased quite a bit. So I sort of, you know, if you look at the totality of this MOU, you know, the good things are the increased emphasis on the Big Bash, the increased money into women's cricket. I just wonder what the negatives are. And, you know, I've heard whispers there's a little bit less money going to the state associations now. And I think you'd imagine the money has to come from somewhere. But all in all, there doesn't seem to be any real gripes with this MOU, which is a fantastic result.
Yeah. Now, does this things like grassroots funding, that's separate to all this, isn't it? Or is that wrapped up in this as well?
No, it's wrapped up in this. That's the issue. So, you know, Cricket New South Wales have a stated goal at the moment to double the number of 5-year-old to 12-year-olds playing cricket, I think it is, over the next few years. They want to double the participation rate, and they're investing significant money in that. And, you know, I think the challenge for state associations around the country now is their budgets were tightened a bit during COVID. I don't think they've gone back to the pre-COVID levels. And, you know, so they have to work out where to allocate the funds. And I mean, that's obviously like any other business or any other association, but, you know, I guess that would be, you know, the money for the Big Bash, you would think, has probably come from that sort of pool.
Yeah. And I've had a little bit of firsthand experience of the grassroots in recent times with my daughter getting into cricket. Not that I've been trying to get, I suppose she's just seen that I watch 700 hours a week and talk about nothing else. So eventually it was bound to happen, but I didn't set out to make that happen. But
do you keep her stats?
Say that again, sorry?
Do you keep her stats?
Just on a blackboard. No. but she took part in a Cricket New South Wales thing where they had a really good coach come out to her school and for 4 or 5 weeks with a group of girls, whoever was interested, to do cricket skills for those 4 or 5 weeks. And it was a really good program. And there's all these girls playing it, loving it. And my daughter's ability to catch and everything just went skyrocketing in the space of a few weeks. She went from not being able to catch to being able to catch. And it was really good. And you look at that and think that's the key to the whole future, because it's a very competitive marketplace, and that, you know, it's a game with high barriers to entry in some ways. And every time I pass the cricket grounds and I see people doing personal training in the cricket nets, and, you know, I'd be the one in trouble if I kicked them out, kind of thing. You know, I worry for the future sometimes. So it's really good to see money well spent and a program that really works. So hopefully there's plenty more. You know, we want money for everything, but hopefully there's plenty more for the grassroots.
Well, I mean, this is a good segue. You know, Cricket New South Wales, I went to the recent awards night and it was a bit of a solemn affair after it was only the second time they've gone through a whole first-class season without winning winning a match. It was a bit like a wake or something. But the men's contracted player list was announced and a third of those players are from New South Wales, which shows that their grassroots is still the major feeder to Australian cricket. So after the MOU, so, you know, they agreed on the money and then they worked out which players got a contract. So Matt Wade came off contract. Matt Renshaw didn't get a contract. Pete Hanscom didn't get a contract. And Matt Kuhneman didn't get contracts. They were players that were contracted throughout the year. Are you surprised at any of those not getting a contract?
No, because when you've got the limited numbers, then they get squeezed out. I mean, Wade obviously is probably just about finished at the international level, if not completely finished, although I think he probably would still have a bit to offer, but it makes sense that he goes. Kuhneman, you know, in an ideal world, I'd have said they should have just said, listen, we've talked about it before, but you're going to go and live in India and play in the Ranji Trophy for the next 3 years and ready for the next time we tour there. Given that they don't have a larger pool of contracted players, and then it makes sense that those players have missed out. It is a bit unlucky for those guys. And I was hearing again, Jared Waitley talking to Pete Lawler from The Australian about how this is potentially a pointer to who's going to be in the ascendancy for a position in the first test or in the World Test Championship final, especially if at some point in the series Warner isn't involved.
Yeah, absolutely. The other player to miss out was Mitchell Swepson. Not a big surprise considering he was overlooked for the Ashes. All right, so then the new contracted players. Well, Lance Morris got a contract. Michael Nisa got a contract, which is interesting because I think, you know, he's bowled very well in English conditions in the past. So I think you can expect him to go on the Ashes tour. I think he was on the 2019 tour. So, Joe Richardson got a contract. And although he hasn't played a lot for Australia, when fit, he is clearly of international quality. So I'm glad they've given him a contract. And then this is the surprise. Marcus Harris got a contract. Now, I heard George Bailey did a press conference after this announcement, and he pretty much indicated that Harris is going to England as the spare opener. And if something happens to Warner or Khawaja, it'll probably be Harris going in there. Bailey said that Harris has been the spare batter for a while, that Renshaw and Hanscom were preferred in conditions in India because Harris comes back into that spot. And, Harris plays county cricket. He scored 100 over the weekend. I know you're not a big fan of Harris, are you?
I wouldn't go that far. I sort of feel like with Harris, Hanscom, Bancroft and Renshaw, that all four of them, they're not out of place at Test cricket, but I don't foresee them coming in and dominating in Test cricket. I think that they're kind of, they're on the cusp, on the threshold. So they don't excite me as potential Test players. So if, you know, given the choice between those four and Warner, I'd rather stay with Warner almost. They're all averaging right, you know, 38, 39. They've had some good seasons, some not so good seasons. I just think that they're very, very solid players, but not in the top echelon. And that's not meant to be unfair on them. It's just the way that it is. So if Harris comes into the Ashes, what am I expecting he's going to do? I'm expecting he's going to struggle because left-handed opening batters do struggle in England. I mean, if you were to say that he was going to play a decent amount of matches in the series, and you had to guess what he's going to average in, I'd be guessing he's probably going to average in the 20s or the 30s.
Mm. Yeah, I do give some stock to the run scoring ability that Harris has developed in the last 2 years. I think especially that experience in England, playing a lot of innings, I think he's really learnt the art of scoring runs. And I think we still might see quite a bit from him at international level. And I think he still could be a really good test opener. He's a friend of the show. You and I interviewed him on Cricket Unfiltered a couple of years ago during the pandemic. So I'd love to see him come in there and score a few test hundreds. So that's the contract list. No other surprises. really in that list. Josh Inglis is firmed as the spare wicketkeeper. Ashton Agar retained his contract. But all in all, a pretty good contract list. And I guess with that extra few spots, it means they're going to be able to squeeze most of the favourites in there.
Yeah, I mean, you make a good point around Harris. Just looking at his recent record, he had that stint in England in 2019, played 7 matches, only averaged 34. Not disgraceful, but not enormous. But then in 2021, he had 8 matches and averaged 55. So that's very, very good. Went back the next year, 9 matches and averaged 43. Not bad. Better than not bad. And then he's just had that one, he's averaging 104 after one match so far. So, look, if he can do a bit what Labuschagne did ahead of 2019 when Labuschagne got all those runs for Glamorgan, then you know, I'll be convinced and I'll be happy for him to be in the side.
George Bailey made some pointed comments about David Warner, and he basically said that, you know, Warner really has to earn his spot in the Test side now, and nothing, you know. He said that he's at the mercy of selection like anyone else, which basically is not the same language we've got in the similar situations in the past. Like, you know, they were backing Finch into the 2020 World Cup. Like, wouldn't have mattered. They were like, he's going to play. Whereas I think they've maybe learnt the error of their ways. And, you know, Warner might not make it to the Ashes now. He might not even make it to the World Test Championship final.
Feels like he will make it to the World Test Championship final.
Well, in that conversation... In that conversation, the big talking point was, is it the fact that England have Stuart Broad? And that's the big difference, that obviously Warner is exposed by Broad. So, you know, Warner might play in the World Test Championship final, but simply because Broad plays for England, he's dropped, even if he scores 100.
I think if he got 100, that it would be hard to drop him. But, you know, if he didn't get 100, if he just then I think that's probably how they're looking to go. And it will depend on what Harris does or who or others or Bancroft or whomever does in the lead up to it. But as much as I think that, yeah, if Stuart Broad's running into bowl and David Warner's opening up and it's a green morning and a overcast morning, I'll be very pessimistic about how Warner's going to go. I'd feel just as pessimistic about how Marcus Harris is going to go, if I'm being honest. Agreed. Hey, what about one player that that didn't get a contract, and I suppose it wasn't a surprise, but he gets talked up a bit and he's got a pretty good record, averaging 40-odd with the bat and 29 with the ball, is Aaron Hardy. Do you reckon he was close to getting a contract?
I don't think he was close to getting a contract, but it's a beautiful segue because I wanted to talk about some performances by some Australian players recently. And at the moment, Australia A are in New Zealand playing New Zealand A with a Dukes ball in preparation for the Ashes, and Aaron Hardy made 100. Aaron Hardy made 115 in the first innings out of 253. So he's a player to watch. Matt Renshaw made 100 in the first match. Matt Renshaw made 100 in the second match as well, I'm just seeing today. So Renshaw back-to-back tons, Hardy a ton, Spencer Johnson 4 wickets. So some good performances. Not surprised Hardy didn't get a contract, but surprised, he's doing well. In New Zealand, they beat Australia in the first game, but it was a pretty generous declaration by the Aussies that allowed New Zealand to win, although they batted well. So that's going on. Also, some Australians over in England. I mentioned Harris scored 100. Sean Abbott took 5 wickets. Quite a bit of action for the Aussies. And you know, I think the Aussies are looking really good for the Ashes.
It's going to be fascinating. I can't wait. I can't wait for the Ashes. It's hard to get my head around all the different formats and everything going on, but I'm really looking forward to it. One other thing, just before I forget, while we're talking kind of administrative things, I really like the interview that Mike Baird, or the quote from Mike Baird, the new chairman of Cricket Australia, how he sort of said he wanted to take on AFL as the sort of country's premier sport. And I just liked hearing that. I just think that's a good thing. And nothing against AFL. And the two aren't necessarily all that much in competition because they're in different seasons and whatever else. And in many ways, there's synergies between them in terms of the sharing of grounds and whatever else. But I like that level of ambition.
Yes, he was at the Cricket New South Wales Awards dinner and he said some nice words. He's part of Manly Cricket Club. He seems to really love cricket. So hopefully he does a good job chairing Cricket Australia. John Knox, the head of Cricket New South Wales, was there and was saying all sorts of stuff about how it was unacceptable that New South Wales didn't win any games. Anyway, and then Greg Shepherd pushed back a bit in a speech. He was, and then Steve Waugh came up and he was like, the players are trying. So it was a weird atmosphere, very strange.
Mm.
But I don't think, just I don't think saying players losing games, calling it unacceptable is the right language. I think that's the sort of thinking that got Australia into sandpaper gate. Like, unacceptable is going out on the piss and getting in trouble. Trying your best and losing a cricket game is not unacceptable.
Yeah, I suppose it depends on how the context. In the sense of, if you say it in the abstract, it's unacceptable for New South Wales, the premier cricketing state, and to go through a season without winning a first-class game. That's true. But if you're sort of saying to the players specifically, then, yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah. All right. So last bit of cricket news. A bit been happening in Australian cricket, and very exciting news because another friend of the show, Phoebe Litchfield, is on a tear. So, you know, there's no doubt her appearance on Cricket Unfiltered has done wonders for her career, because she's earned a contract. So she's a contracted women's cricketer now, and she's on the Ashes tour. So we'll go through the contracts first. Look, all the main things are Phoebe Litchfield got a contract for the first time. Kim Garth, the former Irish international, got a contract. But then it's all the big names that you'd expect. Interestingly, Nicola Carey actually didn't accept the contract. She said she didn't want to go on the Australia A tour and she wanted to stay in Tasmania and prepare for next season. So said no to a contract. Still wants to play for Australia, but you don't often hear that. Mm. And look, indeed. Could be opportunities to play in T20 leagues. There's, you know, we spoke about it before, men's cricket. It's just as big a possibility in women's cricket now. But then the Ashes squad was announced, the Australian Women's Ashes squad. So Meg Lanning leading the squad, vice-captain Alyssa Healy. Then you've got Darcy Brown, Ash Gardner, Kim Garth, the Irish international, former Irish international, Grace Harris, Jess Jonathan, Alana King, Phoebe Litchfield, Talia McGrath, Beth Mooney, Elise Perry, Megan Shute, Annabelle Sutherland, and Georgia Wareham. That's a very strong squad.
Certainly is. And the Ashes themselves, there's a five-day test that kicks them off in Nottingham. So it starts on June the 22nd. Then there are three T20s, Birmingham, and then one at the Oval, one at Lord's. And then three ODIs, Bristol, Southampton, and Taunton. So it's the multi-series format. And Australia would be very, very long odds on favourites to win.
Yeah, so that's really exciting news. Well, that's really it for the cricket news, Paul. I've got a can't let it go to wrap this up. Love a good stat. Well, in the last, it was a week and a half ago now, we had the highest international T20 run chase ever. The West Indies batted first, made, 258. And then South Africa ran it down. Oh, and that was incredible. They scored 259. It was just a phenomenal win by South Africa. And apparently it was echoes of the 434 game that in the dressing room, I think there was a few players in there joking around, oh, I think the West Indies are 10 short. Well, it turned out they were, because I think South Africa won with an over to spare.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been a great game to watch. I watched every ball of that 434 game in 2006. You know, it is a bit funny how you could sort of, it plays into the narrative of South Africa winning the things that don't matter. That they went on and on about that 434 game, but in the midst of that, Australia had won the 99, 2003, and 2007 World Cups.
Good reminder.
Good on them. What a... I mean, it's an incredible score, though. What's that? 500 plus runs in 40 overs.
Yeah, the first ever 500 plus T20 international or any T20 game. So quite phenomenal stuff. Well, Paul, thanks for joining me. We've smashed it out. We'll be back next week for a super over. But yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
Thanks, Betters. Thanks, everyone. See you later.
Don't forget to rate and review the show on your favorite podcast app. Leave a review for the show. Thanks, Martin Lawrence. It's Lorcan Tucker, not Lorcan Murphy. We'll be back next week. Bye-bye.
On Florida's Space Coast, we think you can have the best of both worlds. kind of like right now. You're driving, at your desk, maybe at the gym, but you're also grooving to some music. Visit us and you'll go to the beach and see a rocket launch or go kayaking and manatee spotting. It's all waiting for you on the only beach that doubles as a launch pad. Plan your adventure today at visitspacecoast.com.
Sports Social Podcast Network.